This is Renegade Broadcasting.
I'm a Southerner, first of all. As you know, I'm a former president of the NAACP in the city of Asheville, North Carolina. After I read some of the letters from my babies on how they were losing their First Amendment rights at the schoolhouse and how people were using implied immunity to stop them from wearing their little Dixie outfitted t-shirts, a lot of them crying out to help from the Southern Legal Resource Center. And surprisingly for me, a great deal of those babies that were crying out for help were black babies. The whole institution of slavery has been blamed solely on Christian white folks in the South, and the whole world acts as though it didn't participate, and the whole world did participate. You know, black folks and white folks in the Southland of America, we've been family in lieu of slavery for a long time. For me, the victory didn't come with Marcy over there at Appomattox Courthouse for those folks. In the hearts and minds of us, that thing still was there, the love for the Southland of America. So the only way, basically, that we could do this thing is to dumb down the people and grab black folks and divide and separate them down in the South. How are you going to separate Confederate history and Southern history from black folks? But they don't talk about Levi Carnine, Reverend Mac Lee, Hope Collier, John Edgerton. They don't talk about these folks because, I mean, these are black heroes who fought very bravely. Reverend Mac Lee said, bodyguard to Honorable General Robert E. Lee, he told his people, after he'd educated himself with the money that General Lee had given him, keep your faith in God, buy you some land, get yourself educated, and beyond all else, put your faith and trust in the white man in the South, no other, because he knew what was in the hearts and minds of Southern people. These folks talked about Nathan Bedford Forrest. Well, if it don't be for Nathan Bedford Forrest and that original Ku Klux Klan, I'm not talking about what happened after Nathan Bedford Forrest, many of us Southerners, red, yellow, black, and white, would be just like the dinosaur around here in the Southland of America, extinct. And people don't understand that. They just say Ku Klux Klan, and all of a sudden they gather these images of my flag and white men standing around beating and hanging and whipping black folks. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Thaddeus Stevens and his boys found out how successful that the Klan was at defending Southern folks, red, yellow, black, and white. So what did they do? They started sending their boys down here and dressing up like the Klan and committed terror in the South. And then all of a sudden, you know, Nathan Bedford Forrest understood this thing. He told his men, "Men, let's just come home. Let's go home and forget about this thing." And I'll tell you something. From all the accounts of what you do find, there was not a single man who looked like me that wouldn't have given his life for Nathan Bedford Forrest. Trained cadre of black folks on plantations all across the South Bend of America, made all the implements of war, stayed at home, provided all the foodstuffs. Many went off to fight in the war gloriously. In the 77 cities that I marched through when I walked to Texas, there was not one town that somebody did not come with a black Confederate hero. When my great-great-grandmama Hattie Edgerton stood on those shores in 1788 on her way to the Honorable T.R. Edgerton family in Relevant County, North Carolina, I'm so glad she didn't get left behind. Those Africans didn't like us then. They don't like us now. The only people that ever showed any love for us, those same white folks in those cotton fields and corn fields that we live side by side and call ourselves family. And I'm not here defending the institution of slavery, because slavery was bad when Jesus Christ walked the earth. It's part of man's inhumanity to the man. There's a resolve in those children, much like their grandfathers that we see buried around here. They want to know. And now they have these things called computers. These babies start plugging in these things, and these teachers can't get away with that stuff they used to get away with about, you know, our ancestors were demonic. I am so very, very proud of my heritage and my ancestry. God, in his infinite wisdom, could have sent my grandmama someplace else as a slave, but he sent her to the greatest country. He sent her to the Southland of America. If it hadn't been for that white master, he'd said, "Come in here, sit down, John. They burned out all our property. Our money is no good. All the animals are gone, but we family. Let's work together to make this thing survive and work again." And they did. And they did.
To find out more, call 1-800-MY-SOUTH or visit us on the web.
Welcome, everybody. This is a Reconstructions Live special report. This is Mike Sledge right here on Renegade Broadcasting, renegadebroadcasting.com. Thanks for tuning in. I feel that this is going to be a big, big show, a very important broadcast, and also a very controversial broadcast in many regards. But this, nevertheless, what I'm going to cover is history and real history, and it needs to be covered. And we need not be afraid to go back and look at what really happened in history and discussing history, because it is the foundation of what we will do in the future and what we are doing now. And this story that I'm going to cover tonight also relates directly to what we're doing now in the new nationalist movements throughout this country and the world. And it also is connected in that it shows just how history has been subverted, distorted, and downright changed, and the lies are put out as real history today, because we lost in this country to the powers that be, going back to the war on Northern aggression. And so this broadcast will be very important, not only to set the record straight, but as a warning on how infiltration, subversion, and history revisionism ultimately can destroy movements that are to the benefit of our people, our heritage, our culture, and also how they are used to brainwash future generations into believing a lie so that we can never rise up again and take our heritage country back. The clip you just heard at the beginning there was by H.K. Edgerton, a black Confederate activist who is still alive today, who was the former head of the NAACP in North Carolina, but later started researching history and realized that he had strong Confederate roots as a black man. His family was involved in the Confederacy. He's a member of the Sons of the Confederacy, and that clip might shock a lot of people, because it is not from a white man, it is from a black man. And the truth is that the true history is not at all what people believe it to be today. Not only on the war on Northern aggression, otherwise known as the Civil War, but also on the topic of Nathan Bedford Forrest and the original Ku Klux Klan. And I'm going to be covering that today, because the original story of the Ku Klux Klan is not at all, the original Ku Klux Klan is not at all what you have been programmed to think it is by Hollywood, by the liberal media. And this is a very important broadcast. We need to really understand and recognize what this true history is, because we are going to be smeared the same way. We are going to have to put up with character assassination the same way. And if we fail, I'm sure that this nationalist movement and the activism that we are involved in today will be discredited in much the same ways down the road if we fail, as these guys have been discredited through history revisionism and downright lies. So this is why this broadcast is very important. And that was H.K. Edgerton talking about how the original Klan of Nathan Bedford Forrest worked to preserve and protect all people of sound character and goodwill, all people of good morals, regardless of color, following the end of the Civil War. Oh my God, I can hear the horror and the shock coming from the minds of the multicultural brainwashed masses that might be listening to this broadcast tonight. And I can also hear the horror coming from the shills and agents and trolls who have been sent to discredit any real information that we might discuss here on this network and other networks of the like mind. So this is very important. And there you heard H.K. Edgerton breaking down real history, real Southern history. And I am honored to have men like H.K. Edgerton, a black man, a man of color, on the side of this fight in the South. You see, there is no hatred here. There is no supremacism here. Only a belief in preserving and striving to protect the honor and integrity of good men in this country. Men who believed in the original republic of this country. And this is what we need to be about. Because there are many people. Nobody fits into the mold that has been created by the media today. Okay? No one. You can't make broad brush statements. You can't just lump everybody into the same category. There are many people out there who share our beliefs, and some of them are from backgrounds that might be shocking to the liberals and elite international Jews listening to this broadcast, to the Southern Poverty Law Center, or the Anti-Defamation League, or to many of the shills and operatives working within this truth movement, the so-called alternative movement, who don't want the real history to come out, the real information to come out. And once again, if you are a minority from a minority group, and I'm not talking about white people who actually are the real minority globally. We are the real minority globally, but that's another lie they don't want you to know. But in this nation, if you are from a minority group and you are listening, listen carefully to this broadcast, because you need to get rid of the hate that has been pumped in you by the agitators, by the enemy, and by those who seek to destroy this country and to totally move us even deeper into the Bolshevik programming. So this is why this show is going to be important on many different levels. And that was H.K. Egerton. Great clip, by the way. Great clip. Coming from the mouth of a black man, a proud black man who wants to preserve Southern history, the true honor of the Confederacy, and the real history of the South. And I wanted to play that to move into this broadcast tonight. Now, let's get into the information here. He mentioned, H.K. Egerton did in that clip, of the original Klan, the true Klan of Nathan Bedford Forrest. And that is what I will be covering tonight in this very important, groundbreaking, and controversial special report. Let's get into the history here. Who was Nathan Bedford Forrest? Well, I want to start out with Wikipedia here, just to show you how ridiculous Wikipedia is. And how Wikipedia is used as a major part of history revisionism. And that is why it is so. And let me say this. Wikipedia, how they are distorting history on the web, is an example of why we need to preserve real libraries, books, old books, antique books, and we need to make sure we have those preserved and saved and stored in a safe place so we can maintain our true history and true heritage and save it from the history revisionism and the lies that have been put out by the enemy. And Wikipedia is an example of this distortion in the modern age in which we live of real history. Listen to what they say here when you look up Nathan Bedford Forrest in Wikipedia. Nathan Bedford Forrest, July 13, 1821 through October 29, 1877, was a lieutenant general in the Confederate Army during the American Civil War. He is remembered both as a self-educated, innovative cavalry leader during the war and as a leading Southern advocate in the post-war years. He served as the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, a white supremacist organization. You see how they start that out? A white supremacist organization. Again, this term of white supremacist is a term created by the enemy and put out and propagated by the enemy to discredit the real history of this country and to discredit people that are involved in this nationalist fight today. Using character assassination and distortion to discredit everything we do. And we know how they operate. We've seen how they operate over the years, the enemy that is, and this should not surprise us. But here, surprise us. Here again, using the term white supremacist in Wikipedia. So it pollutes the rest of any information in there that might possibly be true, and most of it isn't. It pollutes it from the beginning. And they put down that mantra at the very beginning. They put down that talking point at the very beginning to discredit all the information. White supremacist. Trying to label everybody involved in preserving their identity, their culture, their race, their nation as being evil, racist, murderers, supremacists who want to rule over people and who believe in slavery. And this could be nothing further from the truth. The truth is that we stand as people of good integrity, goodwill, and who want to preserve and protect all people of all races that are good and moral and who merely want a good, wholesome life for their families in this country. Just like the original KKK, just like the original, I don't even want to call it the KKK, that has been used as a smear tactic, but just like the original Klan used to do, they actually protected people in the South from terrorism from the North following the end of the Civil War or the War on Northern Aggression or the War of Southern Secession, whatever you want to call it. They protected people, all people who were good people, who had character in the South, regardless of color, by the way. Oh, the shock and horror I can hear now. But that is a fact. And I know people today are going to be saying, well, Mike, why do you want to go back and cover things of the past? We need to move forward. We need to move into the future. Well, guess what? We have to go back and cover things that happened in our history because in understanding how we were lied to, bamboozled, and tricked, and to understand how things have been distorted, we can then preserve and protect from infiltration what we are doing now as we move forward. And this is why going back into history is so important. Now, the original Klan of Nathan Bedford Forrest was set up to protect all people in the South from Northern terrorism at the end of the war. Okay? And let me just read you this. Former Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest, one of the original founders of the original Ku Klux Klan, was set the organization up in order to protect the widows and orphans of the Confederate dead. He named the group the Ku Klux Klan, and that is what its real name is, not the KKK or the Ku Klux Klan. The original name was the Ku Klux Klan. And that comes from a mixture of Greek and Scottish meaning. It actually means family circle. Okay? So branches of the Ku Klux Klan sprang up across the South. And white Southerners who were terrorized and frustrated with federal Reconstruction policies used the cover of the Ku Klux Klan to protect people, and mainly protect the orphans and widows of the Confederate dead against Northern terrorism, murder, rape, arson. The terrorism was coming from the North. It was terrorizing people in the South, including black people who were still loyal to the Confederacy. There were black people who fought on the Confederate side. Some of those were just mentioned by H.K. Egerton in that opening clip that was played for this broadcast. And they received the protection of the Ku Klux Klan as well. And their widows and orphans were protected by the Ku Klux Klan as well. Okay? The family circle. Because if you fought and stood up for the South and stood up for your culture, your Southern culture, and you fought and you shed your blood for that cause, regardless of your color, you were protected by the Ku Klux Klan, and it was set up for that very reason. Okay? Now, let's get into this here, which is very interesting. And this is the history that they don't want you to know. Let's get into the history of the original Ku Klux Klan from 1865 to 1869. And here is an old piece that I had printed out from a while back that I want to read to you. And it is unnamed, but I have read many books and looked at the information. It is all accurate, and I want to share this with you tonight. And the best way to do this is to read this. And I think this is information that you might not have ever heard before. And so again, let it all out, listen with an open mind, and really pay close attention to the information that's going to be brought to you this evening. Because I feel this information has never been thoroughly covered before in a proper manner, and that is what this broadcast is all about. Adventurers swarmed out of the north, as much of the enemies of one race as of the other, to cozen, beguile, and use the Negroes. The white men were aroused by a mere instinct of self-preservation until at last there sprang into existence a great clan, a veritable empire of the South to protect the Southern country. Let me read that quote again. Quote, adventurers swarmed out of the north, as much the enemies of one race as the other, to cozen, beguile, and use the Negroes. The white men were aroused by a mere instinct of self-preservation until at last there sprang into existence a great Ku Klux Klan, a veritable empire of the South to protect the Southern country. End of quote. And that was actually a quote from Woodrow Wilson, former president of the United States, in his book, History of the American People. And let's get into that history now. And I will continue to read quotes and bring you history tonight that might shock many of you who have never heard this information before. And this will show you, this broadcast tonight will prove just how deep the lies and propaganda run in discrediting the real history of this country, the real history of our nation against the attacks of the enemy. In April 1865, the War of Southern Secession came to its bitter end. For the last time, the Confederate armies assembled themselves before the Union forces, not to do battle, but to stack arms, surrender, and go home. But what did they go home to? After 4 years of bitter conflict, the South was devastated. Its economy was shattered. Its countryside was ravaged. Its cities lay in ruins, and most bridges and ferries were destroyed or damaged. With the collapse of the Confederate government, Secretary of War Edwin Stanton did not want to grant even a shadow of legality to Southern civil authority. He declared that all police power in the South had reverted to the United States Army. Individuals who held local civil positions had to report themselves to the military authorities. Police state! You want to talk about a police state? This is what they brought to the South. Anyone who violated these instructions was liable to trial before a military tribunal. Does that sound familiar? They would love to do this again, and they will try again, believe me. Civil authority thus fell into a void. Lawlessness abounded. Millions of emancipated Negroes roamed about. They had no education, no work, no homes, and no money. To avoid starvation, they raided and stole whatever they could. Poor whites who owned small family farms were defenseless against large roaming gangs of desperate, hungry Negroes. Rape and murder became commonplace. Does this sound a lot like South Africa today? Yes, it does, doesn't it? So why is this history important? This history is important because it goes directly. It shows you directly what's occurring once again today in the world, in South Africa, and most likely soon to be coming to the streets of America. This is why this is important to understand. The collapse of the Confederate armies alone guaranteed an upsurge in crime as half-starved veterans began their long march back to their homes. In desperation, they scrambled for handouts and resorted to petty thievery. General Johnson noted he could do nothing as Lee's veterans passed through the lines of his still intact army in late April, stealing mules and horses as well as clothes hung out to dry. A week earlier in Thomasville, Georgia, it had been the scene of 3 days of disorder and disbanding soldiers passed through the town. On the night of May 6, more than 50 armed men stole 89 mules and 7 horses from the loosely guarded Confederate depot. On May 8, 400 former soldiers attacked the Confederate storehouses. At the commissary, they broke into 2 warehouses and carried away 125 pounds of corn. They also destroyed all books, papers, and office furniture they could find. Such riots were widespread in the Deep South following the war's end. When a group of paroled soldiers arrived in Houston to find that the Confederate storehouse had already been looted, they threatened to burn the Texas town. Frightened citizens hastily provided food and accommodation for the ex-soldiers. The sanctity of private property had already been severely undermined by the wartime foraging practices of the Union and Confederate forces. By war's end, bands of outlaws had deserters roaming from county to county, plundering the scanty stores of the distressed and impoverished people of the South. More than a year after the end of the war, one newspaper editor noted that it was impossible for Southerners to pick up a local newspaper without being horror-stricken with the details of some terrible atrocity, robbery, rape, or murder. Before the war, these were rare occurrences. Observers often deferred as to which area of the South was most crime-ridden. On top of all this, Southern Unionists shared a bloodthirsty desire for revenge. And we know who those people are, don't we? Were and are. Later, the Radical Republicans, the GOP of the day, later the Radical Republicans transformed vengeance into a state religion and exemplified the bitterness of Southern Unionists who had been persecuted during the war. In the summer of 1865, Governor Brownlow of Tennessee declared that persecutors of the Union men had forfeited all rights to protection and life. Let me repeat this. In the summer of 1865, Governor Brownlow of Tennessee declared that persecutors of Union men had forfeited all rights to protection and life. Yes, just as Alan Dershowitz said in 2001 in a Jewish community center, right, that we no longer have the right of self-defense. This mindset is the mindset that is still being used today, and this was the mindset that was being used against the people of the South then. And this is why history from then is so important to talk about today, because it relates to the struggle that we are now involved in. That same year, one delegate to the Tennessee Constitutional Convention stated that the only right the rebels had was to be hung. You see, that same year, one delegate to the Tennessee Constitutional Convention stated that the only right the rebels had was to be hung. There is ample documentation of cases in which Unionists, seeking revenge for wartime harassment, used their new positions to jail their old enemies on trumped-up charges. On the vaguest rumors and hearsay, cavalry units calmly put the torch to the homes of citizens. Vengeful Unionists formed the Loyal League, okay, ostensibly to suppress crime, keep order, and maintain discipline among the Negro population. But in fact, the Loyal League acted to intimidate political opponents and ex-Confederates. And folks, the Loyal League is the one that did terrorism in the South. The Loyal League was responsible for terrorizing the people. And many of the so-called crimes that the Ku Klux Klan has been labeled with actually were tactics used by the Loyal League and by the enemy during that time. The true terrorist, the Loyal League, right? worsening the post-war situation were the infamous carpetbaggers and scalawags who sought personal profit and political power by exploiting the plight of both the freed Negroes and conquered whites. The radical Republicans declared the southern states would have to be reconstructed before they could be readmitted into the Union. Until then, the ex-Confederates had no rights of citizenship. Think about that. The ex-Confederates had no rights of citizenship. Their citizenship was stripped away. Southern whites were completely disenfranchised with no legal standing. They could not vote, hold public office, or petition for the redress of grievances. In an effort to stop the lawlessness, the South was divided into 5 military districts and martial law declared.
Do you think martial law will ever happen?
It already has happened. It happened against the South by the enemy. Throughout the South, freed Negroes formed the Union League, and black militias in most areas were given the task of enforcing martial law. Let me repeat this. Okay? In an effort to stop the lawlessness, the South was divided into 5 military districts and martial law declared. Throughout the South, freed Negroes formed the Union League and black militias, and in most cases were given the task of enforcing the martial law. They were led by corrupt officers and self-serving politicians. The Union League became the most violent and murderous arm of the Reconstruction to blacks and whites alike, because they went out and killed blacks and whites who were loyal to the Confederacy. It was not a race issue. It was a nation issue. It was a freedom issue. The Ku Klux Klan, the original Klan, not the Jew one that's bought and paid for and run by the SPLC or the ADL today. And the stuff they accused the Ku Klux Klan of doing was really actually done by the Union League, by the Loyal League. They used radicalized former slaves who had joined with the enemy side to form militias which were funded by the enemy, and these black militias were used to enforce the martial law on white people in the South. What's happening in South Africa today has already happened in this country. And they are killing blacks in South Africa too that want to stand up and protect and who are against the white genocide there. This is what needs to be understood. It was amid this atmosphere that John Lester, James Crow, John Kennedy, Calvin Jones, Richard Reed, and Frank McCord met in a law office in Pulaski, Tennessee on Christmas Eve, 1865, and innocently enough decided to form a social club for the purpose of mutual entertainment. The club adopted the style of the college fraternities in vogue at the time. They would dress up in weird costumes and play practical jokes on unsuspecting people. To create an aura of mystery, they invented an unusual name and called their social club the Ku Klux Klan. Okay? Very interesting, isn't it? Very interesting, isn't it? In 1866, the popularity of the Klan grew throughout Tennessee and beyond. At the same time, depredations committed by renegade blacks and whites, coupled with the absence of constitutional law and vengeance-seeking radical Republicans, made life in the South become all but unbearable. Quite by accident, the nocturnal pranksters of the Klan discovered that their costumes and hijinks had a startling effect on the superstitious Negroes. The Negroes thought they were seeing ghosts whenever a group of Klansmen were seen going about at night. The Klan was quick to realize their newly discovered ghostly image could be used to control their people against the roving militias that were used by the enemy and funded by the enemy to keep the people in line down here. Okay? This was a reaction. This Klan was a reaction. The Ku Klux Klan was a reaction to radicalized Negroes who were funded by the enemy to terrorize poor white families in the South and ex-Confederates, black and white. Okay? This was done to protect people, not to murder people. Okay? This was pretty interesting. The Klan was quick to realize that their newly discovered ghostly image could be used for their defense. At first, the Knight Riders went out unarmed, not intending to hurt anyone. They believed that anyone they met would be too frightened to harm them. Things were soon to change. When the carpetbagger and scallywag politicians noticed that renegade Negroes were beginning to behave themselves, and crime went drastically down in areas where a den of the Ku Klux Klan had been established, they reacted swiftly. Carpetbaggers and scallywags were manipulators. They thrived in the violent post-Civil War period, where they could take advantage of people's fears to increase their own fortunes and political powers. The Loyal League and the Union League made willing allies. The Klan was, for the most part, made up of ex-Confederates who were hated by the Loyal League. And if crime and violence went down, no one could justify the expense of maintaining the black militias. The Loyal League and Union League began night patrols in the name of protecting the terrified populations, mostly black populations who were loyal to the Union side. These patrols did not hesitate to open fire on the Klansmen, who up to that point were guilty of nothing worse than Halloween tricks. The Klan responded in kind. Soon skirmishes broke out when night patrols of each side would chance encounter each other. By early 1867, the Klan was spreading throughout large sections of the South. It was still largely unstructured and unorganized. By the same token, the Reconstruction Acts of Congress were very organized and well-structured. In short, the white South had no constitutional or legal rights at all. The white South had no constitutional or legal rights at all. The freed Negroes, however, were given full rights. Think about this for a second. Huh? The end result was Negro rule throughout most of the South, enforced by Union bayonets. To avoid chaos and to confront the oppression of Reconstruction, the Klan sought to organize itself. Spokesmen for the Klan first asked former General Robert E. Lee if he would head the organization. Lee declined, citing his age and poor health. Lee suggested they ask the younger former general, Nathan Bedford Forrest. When the Klan spokesman asked if they could count on Lee's support, Lee said yes, but only if his support for their growing empire remained absolutely invisible. This inspired the Klan to adopt the nickname Invisible Empire. Lee was never actually sworn into the Klan because he was not a paroled ex-Confederate, and he thought this could cause legal troubles, you see, for the fledgling organization. However, he was an active advisor to the Klan's leadership. Nathan Bedford Forrest accepted the Klan's offer to lead the organization, and in April 1867, at a convention in Nashville, Tennessee, Forrest became the first Grand Wizard of the Order of the Ku Klux Klan. The rules and regulations of the order, called the prescripts, were written by former General John B. Gordon, who became the Grand Dragon or state leader of the Klan in Georgia. Okay? Once organized under Grand Wizard Forrest, the Klan became a force to be reckoned with. Disbanded Confederate units recruited to form dens of the Klan Ex-Confederate officers became the Grand Dragons, Giants, and Titans. Ex-Confederate common soldiers made up the rank and file of the Klan and were called ghouls. As this was happening, other organizations independently began to form in the South to combat the depredations of outlaws, renegade whites and blacks, and the Union and Loyal League's carpetbag rule, and the outrages allowed by the Reconstruction Acts of Congress. Some of these new organizations were the Knights of the White Camellia, the White League, the White Brotherhood, and the Red Shirts, to name a few. These organizations were independent, yet just as secret as the Klan. Okay? The Knights of the White Camellia. Interesting when you look into that. Having no legal rights, members of these organizations cannot afford to have their identities made known, and solemn oaths of secrecy were taken by all. The secrecy was both a help and a hindrance to the Klan. While it protected the identity of its members, it became difficult to tell if an act had been committed by the Klan, one or one of the other Reconstruction organizations, by outlaws impersonating the Klan. Now listen to this. This is important because many people within the Union League, the Loyal League, from the Union, started dressing up in the same outfits and committed the atrocities that the Ku Klux Klan was actually blamed for. Okay? Much of the atrocities that you hear about today, much of the lies that you hear about in the history books that were committed by these people, were not committed by them at all. They were committed by the enemy, dressed up and mimicking them and committing atrocities to try to turn the tables. Don't we see this tactic being used today to discredit everything we do? They have fake Nazi groups running around with Jewish leaders, like we saw in Skokie. And that whole act, that whole stage play in Skokie with the Jews pretending to be Nazis, and with so-called Jews protesting the Jew Nazis, became used to incite violence and hatred against anybody who believed in National Socialism or the like. These tactics like that go back a long ways. They go back to this here. They go back to this history that I'm talking about tonight. And this is why this is important. Okay? So it says here that there were outlaws and Reconstruction people dressing up and committing atrocities under the name of the Klan. In the 47 volumes that make up the Ku Klux Report to Congress, there is ample documentation to prove that most of the atrocities attributed to the Klan were in fact committed by other organizations, outlaws impersonating the Klan, and in many cases, Loyal Leaguers and Black Union Leaguers who would disguise themselves as Klansmen and raid hamlets to instill anti-white sentiment for political purposes. Sound familiar? This tactic goes back to then. They're doing the same thing today. When you see a bunch of morons parading around today, and the Klan today is not real for the most part. It is garbage. It is Jew-controlled nonsense. And it's made to look bad, ridiculous, on purpose, to discredit the true memory of the Ku Klux Klan, to protect the Southern people from terrorism, from Union carpetbag terrorism. And this has been their trick. Much of the neo-Nazi movement, much of those groups today are directly controlled by the SPLC, ADL, to do the most ridiculous things, to incite violence, to try to say the most outrageous things to discredit the honor and memory of what they actually did in Germany. It is blasphemy what these people are doing, to use the name Nazi, or to which is not even a name that was used by the German people. It was the NSDAP. And the Ku Klux Klan was, you know, it was the Ku Klux Klan, family circle. They were trying to protect their family, and that included black and white people. White and black people, okay, folks? People who were loyal to the Confederacy, the widows and orphans of people who had died. You know, the widow widows and orphans of dead Confederate soldiers from Northern aggression, Northern terrorism. Okay? The real terrorism was committed by the enemy. The Negro militias were ordered to kill on sight anyone believed to be a Klansman. Okay? During all this, the Klan tried to keep its intentions on a high level. When the Klan Ku Kluxed someone, it was only after the victim was given a trial and was allowed to choose someone to speak on their behalf and defend them. The Klan also gave large sums of money to war widows and orphans. The victims of the Klan were white as well as black, who were people who were proven to be guilty of serious crimes such as barn burnings, theft, rape, or murder. Corrupt politicians, carpetbaggers, and scallywags were also kluxed. Usually the Klan left cryptic messages to warn minor offenders, but if these warnings were ignored, they too could be kluxed, which meant anything from a flogging to execution. These were barbaric times, but the Klan sought to restore law and order, not to destroy it. There was, in fact, no law, and the Klan only used force when the forces of the radical Republicans gave it no other choice. Okay? Ignored by most historians is the fact that after the Civil War, many ex-Union soldiers chose to settle in the South. Shocked by the outrageous conditions Reconstruction imposed upon the white South, many of these ex-Union soldiers either joined or supported the Klan or other resistance groups. Many Union soldiers and officers occupying parts of the conquered South cooperated with the Klan in fighting carpetbag rule and outrages committed by Negro militias, black militias, okay? The term Ku Klux became popular and was widely used. Any resistance to Reconstruction was given the label Ku Klux. You see how they do this, folks. In their efforts to crush all resistance, the radical Republicans labeled all white Southerners as Ku Klux, and the atrocities committed by outlaws, bandits, impersonators, and anyone else were all laid to the Klan's blame. With the death penalty hanging over their heads, Klansmen were in no position to come forward and openly deny the charges and defend themselves. But the Klan did attempt to police the situation. The Klan issued public warnings that anyone caught committing a crime while disguised as a Klansman would be executed. It is documented that the Klan publicly posted warnings condemning the mistreatment of innocent blacks. Listen to this. It is documented that the Klan publicly posted warnings condemning the mistreatment of innocent blacks, and it is equally documented that on at least one occasion, the Klan even hung one of its own members for beating up an unoffending black man. If you don't believe me, see the execution of Bill German. Search the execution of Bill German to see what I'm talking about. The Klan was in a dilemma. It found itself in a two-front war. On the one hand, they were confronting criminals, carpetbaggers, and renegade black militia people in their efforts to protect their families and restore law and order. On the other hand, they had to deal with impersonators who committed all manner of outrages motivated by everything from personal revenge to political manipulations. Plus, the Klan itself was declared outlaw and hunted. As anti-white Reconstruction legislation became more brutal, the situation worsened. All sides clashed in nocturnal pitched battles, which sometimes involved hundreds of participants as well as the use of a cannon. During Reconstruction, there were approximately 50,000 casualties. During the Reconstruction, folks, there were around 50,000 casualties. The Klan grew to over 400,000 members. Negroes, on the one hand, opposed the Klan, while Black Union League impersonated the Klan to ferment further unrest and anti-white hatred. Let me repeat this. Okay? Black Union Leaguers impersonated the Klan to ferment further unrest and anti-white hatred, and they are doing the same tactics today to discredit what we are trying to do here. Real nationalists, real people who want to protect culture and heritage, defend all moral people of character. Atrocities and genocide and these horrible, horrible acts of murder, not self-defense and not protection, those are the tactics and the mindset committed by the enemy, not by true knights. Not by true knights who believe in chivalry, who believe in defense and protection and the protection of life, who are pro-life, not pro-death like the enemy is. And I want to make that clear because I am sick and tired of the crimes of the enemy. In modern times, you could say the crimes of the elite international Jew being projected and put upon the innocent people who are merely trying to protect their communities, their people, from the enemy. And it is time that we stood up aggressively to put out this information to make sure that people understand exactly where we are coming from. Okay? At the same time, thousands of Negroes aided the Klan. Listen to this. At the same time, thousands of Negroes aided the Klan, who helped rid them of carpetbaggers and outlaws. The black people were being terrorized by these terrorists as well. And they called upon the Klan to protect their communities, and the Klan protected the black communities as well from lawlessness, from rape, from murder, from arson, from the atrocities of the enemy. That's not in your history books, is it? There is documented proof that there were even Negroes, there were even blacks, folks, who were actually sworn into the Klan as members. You don't believe me? I will get into black members of the Klan later on, okay? Full-fledged guerrilla warfare was on the verge of breaking, and throughout the South and the federal government found itself powerless to stop it. The harsher the government mandates became, the stiffer the resistance became. Finally, in 1869, newly elected President Grant agreed to a secret meeting with Grand Wizard Forrest. The two men had faced each other in the Civil War and were now facing each other in a new kind of war. Grant asked what it would take to end the turmoil. Forrest replied, "The restoration of full rights of citizenship to the white South and home rule." Grant agreed. Grand Wizard Forrest would disband the Klan, and later that year, Grant would begin the process of withdrawing federal troops and restoring constitutional rights to the South. Unfortunately, the unrest did not end with the disbandment of the Klan in 1869. Grand Wizard Forrest, Bedford Forrest, had no authority over the other independent groups that also opposed the Reconstruction. Some of these groups, like the White Camellia, had grown to be as large as the Klan, and the outrages committed by impersonators continued. You see, because the enemy, the radical enemy, and we know who you are, continued just as they continue today. When you see these, I'm going to say it, when you see these Talmudic Jews impersonating as Nazis or impersonating as the Klan today, for the most part, it is complete nonsense. It is, because the real Klan disbanded, the Ku Klux Klan. Yes, that is the fact of the matter. Okay, the fact of the matter. In the early 1870s, the Ku Klux Klan, as it had been known, ceased to exist, but all resistance had been labeled Ku Klux by northern newspapers and public officials. Let me repeat that. In the early 1870s, the Klan, as it had been known, ceased to exist, but all resistance had been labeled Ku Klux by the northern newspapers and public officials. In 1871, Congress passed the Anti-Ku Klux Act, which launched a massive investigation into the affairs of the late insurrectory states. The federal government found its own policies largely to blame for the post-Civil War turmoil. There you go. The federal government found that its own policies were largely to blame for the post-Civil War turmoil. Gradually, the government began to make amends, and slowly all organizations labeled Ku Klux faded away. By 1880, there was no longer a need for them. The restoration of civil liberty, civil authority, and home rule to the White South enabled law enforcers to stamp out the outlaws and criminal impersonators of the Ku Klux Klan. This has now changed. That has been changed ever since the enemy consolidated power, the elite international Jew consolidated power with the central bank, with the creation of the ADL. All that has now changed. They're impersonating again because they're afraid of they're trying to preempt the backlash against them, the rise of a new nationalism against them. And they're doing the same tactics they did now. It's very important to understand. While most historians claim that the country has never fully recovered from the Civil War, the reality is that the country has never recovered from the Reconstruction. More accurately, we should simply consider the Reconstruction as the last battle and chapter of the Civil War. In the wake of Reconstruction, many myths have sprung up concerning the Klan, and the most ridiculous ones seem to be the most widely accepted today as facts. Most biased modern historians claim that the Klan just wandered about looking for innocent Negroes to hang. In fact, the original Klan never hung anyone who was truly innocent and did much to protect the innocence of both races. And I will read to you General Order Number 1 to prove this later in this broadcast. Another myth is that the Klan was started by the Knights of the Golden Circle, which was a Confederate guerrilla organization that operated in the border states of the Midwest. This is unfounded. While former members of the Knights of the Golden Circle may have joined the Klan at one time or other, the origins of the Klan are well documented by its own founders. The most common myth is that the original Klan burned crosses. This is the invention of the fiction writers. Thomas Dixon, and elaborated upon by movie producers D.W. Griffith, okay, in the 47 volumes that make up the Ku Klux Report to Congress. Not one eyewitness, not one ex-Klansman, not one surviving victim, not one newspaper article makes any reference at all to a fiery cross of any kind. In the Klan's own prescripts, much detail is given to making the Klan flag or grand ensign, but no mention of a cross, fiery or otherwise, is made. It was not until 1915 that former Methodist minister William Joseph Simmons adopted the Methodist religious symbol of the fiery cross as a symbol for his revived Ku Klux Klan after being inspired by the Dixon novel. Now let me get into this because this is very important. William Joseph Simmons, a Methodist minister, adopted the Methodist religious symbol for the revived Klan. This is very important because I'm going to tell you this. Anybody that is from the South knows that the Methodist Church, for the most part, was a very liberal church, Southern church. And there were a lot of Jews within the Methodist Church. Okay, and it is a fact that, you know, I mean, let me give you an example. Anybody remember the Elian Gonzalez episode we had in Cuba where they kidnapped this kid here in Florida and sent him back to Cuba? That had the person working with Janet Reno on that was a person that was working with the Council of Churches who was a Methodist. The Methodist Church became very communistic down the road. Not all of them. There are still many good Methodist churches, but many of the Methodist churches became very communistic. Okay? So this is very important to understand. So I'm highly dubious of this reemerged Klan coming out of this operation. And that needs to be noted, and that needs to be understood. Okay? And they are the ones that brought in the fiery crosses, the burning crosses, all this craziness, loose talk and radicalized talk. They're the ones that brought this in 1915. Also the movie Birth of the Nation, okay, which was propaganda that made the original Ku Klux Klan look like they were evil, like they were guilty of genocide. And this became the film that was later used for the revived Klan, okay? Just as, let me make a comparison, just as the movie American History X, right? Just as the movie American History X has now been connected by the same Jewish producers to connect it to the modern neo-Nazi movement in this country to make them look ridiculous. So this was done originally with Birth of a Nation, in my opinion, and from the new revived Klan coming out of the Methodist operation there. The same tactic to establish the new revived version was based upon lies, disinformation, history revisionism, and the new Klan that emerged was, in my opinion, totally created by the enemy itself to discredit, to defame, and to smear what the original Klan stood for. And they're doing the same thing today. We see the Skokie situation, right? Where Frank Collin, right? The Jew child molester, who ran that operation in Skokie, was really one of the first events that then was used as a broad brush to label all people involved in a National Socialist agenda, right? And also to gain sympathy for the so-called Holohoax story. So they use this propaganda at a time. It's called association. They come up with a movie. Then they themselves create a new revived version, and then they go around doing all these ridiculous things to discredit the original version. Why was this done in, let me tell you when this was done, In 1915, former Methodist minister William Joseph Simmons created the new revived Klan. This is the same time that they had consolidated the central bank, the Jews did. This was the same time they had the Federal Reserve, around the same time the ADL was created. So of course, you create the ADL, and at the same time, you create, from my research, you create a new division, a revived Klan, so you can create the organization to do ridiculous things and commit atrocities, so you can have justification for your ADL, and also the NAACP created around the same time, so you can have justification for those organizations to get funding and to exist. So this history must be broken down. So again, wow, we see it. Federal Reserve, ADL, NAACP, World War I, and the revived Klan, all happening from 1913 to 1920. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Birth of a Nation coming out around this time. This then was created, and then the new revived Klan, which was not doing anything even close to what the original Ku Klux Klan was involved in, Ku Klux Klan, Family Circle was involved in during the Reconstruction period, then is used to gain sympathy so they could then create the Civil Rights Movement to destroy the South, to the South, and to strip states' rights and to strip the rest of the sovereignty that they hadn't stripped completely during the war, Northern Aggression, the Civil War. So they then used the revitalized Klan. It engages in Jewish tactics. Then they used the NAACP and the ADL to combat the Klan they invented, the revived Klan that they invented themselves, to gain sympathies, to gain funding, to then go into the South and destroy people like George Wallace. You see how this works? This is how they operate. And we need to understand this so we can defend our movement today from infiltration and these type of campaigns. And we need to spot these type of campaigns instantly and deal with them instantly so they don't gain root and destroy everything that we're involved in. Okay? I move forward. For nearly 100 years, the Klan was recognized as the savior of the white South. Amid the lawlessness and chaos of the Reconstruction era, the Klan sought to restore law and order and protect the defenseless population. It was incredibly successful. Unfortunately for all involved, it could only use the means at hand. Amid a reign of terror committed by the highest levels of government to the lowest common outlaws, the Klan resorted to the use of terror. Having felt they accomplished their goals for the most part, the Klan terminated its former self and activities, transformed itself, and then dissolved itself, and was not defeated by government legislation. Had there never been a revival of the Ku Klux Klan, the original Klan would have maintained its place in history as an organization of decent men who were forced under unbearable conditions to do only what was necessary to protect life, liberty, and property at a time of unprecedented lawlessness and abuse of authority by a government gone mad with power, just like today. Now, I want to read to you General Order Number 1, okay? This is the dismissal error, 4th Green Day, last hour, October 20th, 1869. General Order Number 1, whereas the order of the KKK in some localities being perverted from its original honorable and patriotic purposes, and whereas such a perversion of the order is in some instances defeating the very objects of its origins and is becoming injurious instead of subservient to the public and peace and public safety for which it was intended, and in some cases is being used to achieve personal benefit and private purposes, and to satiate private revenge by means of its mass features, and whereas public sentiment is against a mass organization in this country, and whereas their mass features offer an opportunity to bad men outside of the order to depredate and outrage the people in our name, and whereas a few disobedient and bad men have gotten into the order through imprudence and otherwise, and whose conduct under a mass is a disgrace to the good name and honorable reputation of the order, it is therefore ordered and decreed that the mask and costumes of this order be entirely abolished and destroyed, and every grand cyclops shall assemble the men of his den and require them to destroy in his presence every article of his mask and costume, and at the same time shall destroy his own. And every man who shall refuse to do shall be deemed an enemy of this order and shall be treated accordingly. That means that the revived is not the original. They are the enemies of what the original Ku Klux Klan, the family circle, stood for. As I just said, they were created, the revived version, by the enemy from the Methodist Church around the same time that the ADL, NAACP, and Federal Reserve were created. I'm reading now from the actual general order from the original Ku Klux Klan, the original family circle, which proves what I'm saying to be true. Every man who shall hereafter be seen in mask or costume shall not be known or recognized as a member of this order, but shall be deemed an enemy of the same, and for such offense shall suffer the extreme penalty of the law. This is not to be understood to dissolve the order of the Ku Klux Klan, but is hereby held more firmly together and more faithfully bound to each other in any emergency that may come. All demonstrations are positively prohibited until they are ordered by a grand titan or higher authority. The disarming of Negroes, except when they may be arming and assembling for insurrectionary purposes, is positively prohibited. The disarming, listen to this, the disarming of Negroes, except when they may be arming and assembling for insurrectionary purposes, is positively prohibited. And the whipping of Negroes or white men is also prohibited. This will not be allowed. All interference into the domestic affairs of families is prohibited. Such is a prostitution of the order from its high and public purposes. The use of the order for the achievement of personal benefit and the gratification of private revenge in all cases prohibited. This order has nothing to do with the personal difficulties or private transactions of men. Such is a perversion of the order. The interference with any man on account of his political opinion is wrong and positively forbidden. The terrifying of men to prevent them from collecting their debts or for any similar purpose is prohibited under severest penalty. This is a disgrace to the order, and never was for a moment the purpose of the same, it being a public protective institution and nothing else. The breaking and invading of jails for the abduction and execution of criminals is positively and under all circumstances prohibited. Anyone who shall write letters in the name of this order to terrify men for the accomplishment of personal designs shall be severely punished. All demonstrations are positively prohibited until ordered by the authority aforesaid. The profoundest quiet and deepest secrecy concerning everything that relates to the order shall at all times be maintained. Any man who shall violate this order shall be deemed an enemy to the order and shall suffer the extreme penalty of the law. We must protect our good name and honor from the disgrace that a few bad men may desire to bring upon us. And any man who shall expose this order or any of the members of the same shall suffer the extreme penalty of the law heretofore prescribed. Every Cyclops will destroy this order as soon as it is read to members of their den and staff by the command of the Grand Wizard. There you go. Okay? Now, let me get into now the black members of the original Klan. Because this has to be broken down in order for it to be understood. Because we have been lied to, folks, in so many ways. And we have to break this down. And let me get this. I got it here in my notes. And before I get into that, I want to read this section here, which is very important. Okay? Because this... After the original KKK disbanded, there was no Ku Klux Klan until it was revived in 1915. Therefore, we feel that the 1911 edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica and the 1918 edition of the World Book Encyclopedia give an unbiased and accurate brief description of the original Ku Klux Klan. Now, they changed the history, just like I read to you at the beginning of the show in Wikipedia, just like I read to you at the beginning of this broadcast, how they engage in the smear tactics and history revisionism. So here we see that they actually changed the World Book Encyclopedia and Encyclopedia Britannica to then start covering what the revived version of the Klan did and actually connect that to the original Klan, which is a total lie and distortion, as I have just read you the order number one of the disbanding of the original Ku Klux Klan, the family circle. So the new one is a perversion, in my opinion, created by the enemy. So now they use the perversion to label the original. You see how this works? This is what they do time and time again. Time and time again. Now I want to get into here the history of the Bill German situation. The execution of Bill German in Overton County. The Union and American of Saturday says, quote, by a private letter from a trustworthy gentleman residing at Cookeville in Putnam County, we are giving some further information in regard to the recent execution near Livingston in Overton County by a body of supposed Ku Klux of the young man W.M. German, an account of which he published Thursday morning. He says that a few days before the execution, German shot and badly wounded, and supposedly he had killed a Negro man living in his neighborhood. The shooting took place in a public road, and the Negro managed to crawl to the house of his employer, where he told who had shot him. The Negro had the character of being a quiet, peaceable man, and as there had been no previous trouble between him and German, it was supposed the crime was perpetrated in pure wantonness. It is thought that the persons by whom German was killed were members of a secret organization to which he belonged. But whether Ku Klux or not, Nobody in the neighborhood appears to know. The body of men concerned in the execution numbered about 200, and none of them were identified by citizens who witnessed their appearance and departure. Accounts reported Bill German was found hanged in a nearby barn. A sign posted there declared, "Hung for shooting a Negro, Bill Cullum, and violating the laws of the Ku Klux." So here we see a story. There were actually black members sworn in to the Klan. And here we see a story, the death of Bill German, right? The execution of Bill German by the Klan, who killed an innocent black person. He was given justice by the original Ku Klux Klan. And they actually hung for shooting a Negro, Bill Cullum, and violating the laws of the Ku Klux. There the sign was posted and declared by the original Ku Klux Klan itself. And here we see what happened. This innocent black guy was terrorized by a group of people that no one could identify, most likely impersonators working on behalf of the enemy, folks. How do we know that those freedom riders that were murdered in the South during the 1960s civil rights conflict, how do we know they were even murdered by Southerners? They might have been murdered by people in the communist movement and then blamed upon people in the South, just like they did back during the Reconstruction times. When the Loyal League would dress up like the Klan and commit atrocities and blame it on the original Klan. You have to understand how they operate. You have to understand these tactics. So that's an interesting story, right? The Union and American of Saturday says. This is a letter from an old paper then. Now, Captain John Lee Above organized KKK dens throughout his home country in North Carolina. September 28, 1935, when Captain John Lee, a respected tobacco man, died at 92, the nation discovered he had gotten away with murder. He was the last of the perpetrators of a Klan execution that had taken place 65 years earlier in Caswell County, North Carolina. The victim was a state senator and justice of the peace named John Walter Stevens. Lee was a Confederate veteran and organizer of the KKK in his county. Stevens was a scalawag working to deliver the black vote for the radical Republicans. In his fervor, he intimidated white Democrats. On Sunday morning, May 22, 1870, Stevens was found dead in a storeroom of the county courthouse. The killing created a furor. It was widely believed that Stevens' death was a Klan execution, and numbers of white men, including Lee, were arrested and questioned, but all remained silent and all were released. As time passed, the various suspects died until only Captain Lee was left. Asked repeatedly what happened, he would reply, "You can all wait till I die." In 1919, he secretly gave three state officials a statement about the execution to be read posthumously. Made public upon his death, the affidavit stated that Stevens had been tried for arson and extortion, found guilty, and sentenced to death by the Klan. Naming the Klansmen involved, Leah then described how Stevens was executed. Leah commented, "With no indication of remorse, Stevens had a fair trial before a jury of 12 men." Okay? Footnote, it must be noted that Stevens, who was senator and justice of the peace, was breaking the law by rigging an election and by intimidating white citizens, apparently through arson and extortion. So what were the respectable white people to do? Go to the justice of the peace and report it? The man who represented the law was the one who was breaking it. In this case, we the people acted as the instrument of the law. Stevens was not lynched. He was given a trial with a jury of 12 equals. When the government, which is entrusted to administer the law, betrays the public trust and in fact becomes the violators of the law, then it is not only the duty of the people to act, but it is also their right to act. And it is their right to defend themselves. And it is the right for us to defend ourselves today. It is our right today to defend our neighborhoods, to our communities. National protectionism. We must protect our people against the enemy who will do whatever it takes to win. They are the ones guilty of genocide. They are the ones guilty of murder without proof. They are the ones that set up tribunals. They are the ones that do not allow due justice. They are the ones who abolish constitutions and institute martial law, as you have heard from my history that I've gone through tonight. They are the ones that do this. We must hold ourselves to a higher standard and make sure that down the road, real justice is done based upon what is right for everybody. And those who do not practice in an ethical manner or do not promote justice in an ethical manner, I would question just who they are. Those who throw around loose talk about wanting to commit murder, who are bloodthirsty like ravenous demons, they need to be questioned on who exactly they are. Because they were not members of what was originally an honorable organization. And I read the general order. They were not members, but mostly infiltrators, traitors, liars, sleight of hand, jokers, working on behalf of the enemy to discredit the good name of the people who merely tried to protect themselves in a time of lawlessness, in a time of real terror that was thrown upon the Southern people. And this history is very important to understand, and it's necessary as we move forward into the future, as we move forward to break down and to talk about what we face today. We can no longer fall victim to the same tactics and the same smear tactics. We must preempt their smear tactics. We must preempt new history revisionism. We must stand up today and speak the truth, and we must go back into history. Because our ancestors shed their blood so that we may speak today, so that we may have networks like Renegade Broadcasting, so that we may stand up to tell future generations of what occurred in the past, so we will not make the same mistakes, so we can move on with protectionism, with nationalism, and we can give a future for our people, our culture, our heritage, for our nations. We must go back and restore what has been distorted. We must restore the true history of our ancestors. We have nothing to be ashamed of. The only people that should be ashamed are those enemies who seek total domination, is our enemy, the real supremacist, who seek to rule over everyone, who seek to make us all slaves on their global plantation. The only people that should be ashamed is the enemy. They are the ones who want the tribunals. They are the ones who do not want constitutions or freedom. We stand for freedom. We stand for justice. We stand for honor. And anyone proclaiming to be a knight must be a gentleman, must be chivalrous, must respect the rights of all people. We are not supremacists. We are not evil. We are not hate mongers. We merely want to protect our people, and we believe that other people should have the right to protect themselves. We believe that all nations should have the right to exist, and they should have the right to protect their citizens from the tactics of the enemy. We believe that Africa should have the right to defend itself, its own people. We believe that Asia should have the right to defend and protect its own people. We believe that the Hispanics and Latinos should have the right to defend their own people. And we believe that white people should have the right to defend and protect their communities, their cultures, and their nation. Once again, survival. Protectionism, not hate. And once you know the true history and the real history, it's an entirely different way to view it, isn't it? It's an entirely different way to see things, isn't it? It's not the American History X that you've been shown and given by the Jew-controlled Hollywood to discredit the nationalist movement that are now rising, to discredit the backlash rising up against the enemy to administer true justice? No, no, no. You see, that's the propaganda. Just as they created Birth of a Nation to discredit and to distort what the original Ku Klux Klan was about, the family circle. And they invented a new version of what was disbanded. And I proved that here tonight on this broadcast, to discredit what was done in the past, because they knew eventually this would happen in the future. And they had to have an evil boogeyman, which they created. They always create the boogeyman that they fight against, don't they? Whether it's a fake Ku Klux Klan or a fake or a neo-Nazi movement, to act crazy and ignorant and stupid, to give them even more power, our enemy, to even play up the victim card even more, to give them even more power. They do the same thing over and over again, whether it's creating and funding the Muslim Brotherhood to commit genocide and atrocities in the Middle East, to then blame on all Muslim people in the Middle East so they can commit genocide in Palestine or Libya or Iraq or Afghanistan. They create the enemy. They create the atrocities. They project their crimes on us for the purpose of expanding their reign of terror and control grid globally. And also to pretend like they have a force aligned against them that is victimizing them, so they can enrage and fill with hate, put hate in the minds of their proxies to eventually destroy whatever enemy they feel is their biggest threat at the time. And I'm here to tell you today that they feel that their biggest threat today is the European people, is the white people, and they want to get rid of us, and they are engaged in a culture war against us. And this must be understood. And this must be what we fight against in an honorable, proper, orderly fashion. And understanding our true history is the step we move in the right direction, not only to rectify the distortions and lies that have been propagated to discredit our ancestors, but as we move forward into the future to protect our people. And this has to be understood. I want to read to you now a piece here about Nathan Bedford Forrest, the first leader of the Ku Klux Klan. And this is a great article, and it came out in February 17th of 2011 in the Confederate American. The Confederate American. And it's a great piece. Nathan Bedford Forrest. There's a Nathan Bedford Forrest license plate controversy. And the article says, I'm sure you've heard of the controversy concerning the Mississippi Division of the Sons of Confederate Veterans desire to produce a license plate honoring Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. CBS News used the following wording to describe the situation on February 13, 2011. The Sons of Confederate Veterans proposed that Mississippi issue a specialty plate honoring General Nathan Bedford Forrest, who many historians say was the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, the white supremacist group that terrorized blacks in the South after the Civil War. See how they write this? CBS, our good old Jew media. Forrest is the only individual they want to commemorate. All other plates would be in remembrance of battles that took place in Mississippi or Confederate veterans as a whole. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, sent a letter to Barber on Friday saying it would be immoral and unconstitutional to honor a KKK leader, even though there were black members of the original Ku Klux Klan, folks. You see how absurd this is? Even though I just played you H.K. Egerton at the beginning of this broadcast, speaking highly, knowing the true history of the original Klan. You see how the NAACP, whose first leader was Joel Spingarn, a Jewish individual, who was created and funded with Jewish money around the same time that the ADL was formed, why they had to create the mouthpieces to keep ensuring that we never rise again. That's why they had to do that. Here's what the NAACP said. We are asking quote, "We are asking the governor to stop this action immediately. Every fair-minded Southerner knows that the Civil War was a negative time in history, and having a Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan on the back of vehicles will only tarnish the state's image." End of quote, NAACP State President Derek Johnson said. This is why we have to protect our image now and not and be careful who we mingle with in this movement, folks, in this nationalist movement. If people are saying ridiculous things and making ridiculous claims and talking about committing murder or killing people without proper justice, without proper trial, without being orderly, they most likely are working with the enemy, and everything we are doing now will be tarnished the same way they did to tarnish the image of the original family circle, the original Ku Klux Klan. And we cannot let this be the case today. It is important what we say and how we conduct ourselves. Very important. And like I've been saying recently, we need to be sober-minded. We need to be upstanding people. We need to get our acts together and start being people of character. The article continues, "As usual, the NAACP and the news media are attempting to shape opinions rather than impartially relay facts. The original motive in starting the Klan was to protect native Southerners from the abuse being meted out against them by carpetbaggers and the like. But when it became purely a racial organization, General Forrest disbanded and renounced the KKK. Furthermore, General Forrest then embraced a radical doctrine that was light years ahead of even what was going on in the North of that day." You want to know the truth? Folks, General Nathan Bedford Forrest was the first people to want the protection and allowing of blacks to have rights in the South. Why do you think the South was originally going to give blacks their rights in the South? Real rights. Okay? But the communists had to deny them and defeat people like Nathan Bedford Forrest and defeat the original Ku Klux Klan so they could create their reign of terror, expand their reign of terror coming from the North, so they could then put in mostly radical Republican politicians in the South, and many of them Jews, to then put out segregation, all this kind of stuff, which was done by themselves. Do you understand how this works? Do you understand how this works? We didn't need a communist civil rights movement. We wouldn't have needed a communist civil rights, Jewish civil rights movement of the 1960s to bring in Bolshevism and to create a new black militia potentially down the road to terrorize our communities and our neighborhoods. If we would have won back then and we would have defeated the enemy and we would have stood up for real justice, real rights, real morality, real integrity, real character, all people would have been defended and protected. There would have been protectionism for all people. Just like the original Klan was doing in its original form. I continue with this article of Nathan Bedford Forrest. "The original motive in starting the Klan was to protect native Southerners from the abuse being meted out against them by carpetbaggers and the like. But when it became purely a racial organization, General Forrest disbanded and renounced the KKK. Furthermore, General Forrest then embraced a radical doctrine of rights for blacks that was light years ahead of even what was going on in the North of that day. This won him praise of a prominent civil rights group known as the Independent Order of Pallbearers Association, which was a forerunner of the NAACP. You see, this would have been a real group that would have worked in a legitimate way, not in a communistic way, with the black community. It was already in place. So once again, our enemy, the international Jew, the communists, the Bolsheviks, come in, destroy what was already taking place, hijack it, then they create new organizations to terrorize the people they seek out, that they say they are trying to help, to fill them and enrage them with hate against the people they are trying to destroy. This is what they always do. So all you trolls and ADL agents and operatives working on behalf of the enemy who come in our chat room, who go to other places and lie about who we are and what we do, and try to hold standards to us that don't exist, that were created by the international Jew themselves to discredit any movement that we're involved in today, any new nationalism, you can go straight to hell. You are liars. You have always been liars, and that is what you will always be. And you will eventually hang yourself. But we will not shut up, and we will not stop speaking the truth. And we will not quit going back and looking at real history and standing up for what was right. We will not stop doing it. He accepted the invitation of the Independent Order of Pallbearers to speak at their national convention on July 5th, 1875. The events surrounding the speech were covered by a newspaper of that day. And let me read you. Miss Lou Lewis, daughter of a pallbearer member, was introduced to Forrest, and she presented the former general a bouquet of flowers as a token of reconciliation, peace, and goodwill. On July 5th, 1875, Nathan Bedford Forrest delivered this speech. Ladies and gentlemen, I accept the flowers as a memento of reconciliation between the white and colored races of the southern states. I accept it more particularly as it comes from a colored lady. For if there is any on God's earth who loves the ladies, I believe it is myself. I came here with jeers of some white people who think that I am doing wrong. I believe I can exert some influence and do much to assist the people in strengthening fraternal relations, and shall do all in my power to elevate every man, to depress none. I want to elevate you to take positions in law offices, in stores, on farms, and wherever you are capable of going. I have not said anything about politics today. I do not propose to say anything about politics. You have a right to elect whom you please. Vote for the man who you think the best. And I think when that is done, you and I are free men. Do as you consider right and honest in electing men for office. I do not come here to make you a long speech, although invited to do so by you. I am not much of a speaker, and my business prevented me from preparing myself. I came to meet you as friends and welcome you to the white people. I want you to come nearer to us. When I can serve you, I will do so. We have but one flag, one country. Let us stand together. We may differ in color, but not in sentiment. Many things have been said about me which are wrong, and which white and black persons here who stood by me through the war can contradict. Go to work, be industrious, live honestly, and act truly. And when you are oppressed, I'll come to your relief. I thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for this opportunity you have afforded me to be with you, and to assure you that I am with you in heart and mind. That was Nathan Bedford Forrest again, thanked Miss Lewis for the bouquet, and then gave her a kiss on the cheek, such a kiss unheard of in the society of those days in 1875. But it showed a token of respect and friendship between the general and the black community, and did much to promote harmony among the citizens of Memphis, Tennessee. The good name, folks, of General Nathan Bedford Forrest should not be allowed to be falsely demeaned by those with a leftist, politically correct agenda. On the contrary, he must be remembered as a civil rights pioneer who tried his best to head off the over 100 years of racial strife that followed the war between the states, as I call it, the War on Northern Aggression. And let me say this, that racial strife, here's what you need to understand. That racial strife was done. They had installed their communist politicians. Remember, Karl Marx used to write under another name articles in support of the Union of Lincoln, articles in support of destroying the South during the Civil War times in our history. And what happened was, they brought the South down, they terrorized the South, and then installed their politicians in the South after they won during the Reconstruction. And those politicians who the communists put in the power in the South were the ones that then created more racial strife. The racial strife would have ended. We would have had our separate communities. but we would have been prosperous together as separate people. But these communists, these agitators, these international Jewish Bolsheviks who took over the system, installed their politicians, then embarked on a reign of terror, posing as a new Klan that they created themselves in 1915, putting out their early propaganda from their controlled media outlets like Birth of a Nation, just like they did with American History of X Now, and installed their politicians and created even more racial strife that would have ended with men like Nathan Bedford Forrest, a man that should be talked about in our schools today, not Martin Luther King, a communist, but a real man in 1875, one of the first heads of the Ku Klux Klan, the family circle, speaking to a real group, to a real black group who was interested in helping the black community, not indoctrinating the black community with communist lies. You see, if men like this would have been successful, there would have been no need for an NAACP. There would have been no need for any of those groups, because the enemy would have been defeated. And there would be no hate like that we see today. There would be none of these crazy, disgraceful actions taking place and then being blamed on the people that they are really trying to destroy. You see, the history that has been presented to people in our re-education camps called public schools today in this country is not the true history. And if you don't understand the true history, we will be doomed to repeat it. So this is why this is so important to understand. We want nationalism. We want national protectionism. We want to protect people against the enemy. We ask you to join the fight today by coming over and taking a look at nationalprotectionism.com. Sign the petition to get rid of these dual citizens, these traitors, the same people that had the mindset like they had back in these days, who committed terror atrocities, who instituted martial law, who set up tribunals, who terrorized the black community, who would not let the true Confederates protect all communities, white and black, of the South. They wanted oppression. They wanted murder. They wanted genocide, just like they are delivering today in South Africa. We are pro-life. They are pro-death. We are pro-protecting people, not murdering people. We believe in real justice, with principled justice. We do not have the same mindset the enemy has. That is not a civilized human being. That is one of a monster, of a venomous, venomous snake that slithers and seeks to destroy us all. We must not be afraid to talk about controversial subjects. They have done a good job in discrediting history and rewriting history, and we must now do our job of rewriting the wrongs, rewriting with the truth what they have lied and created. They've created their myths, their lies, their stories. We need to re-educate our people as we move forward into this new century of nationalism. It must be done, it shall be done, and it will be done. Thanks for tuning in. Good night, everybody. Take care.